Dami Im is well known to music lovers both internationally and here in Australia. She is also recognised all over Australia for winning The X Factor back in 2013, her critically lauded performance on Eurovision in 2016, and her new role on Celebrity MasterChef Australia. Since winning The X Factor, Dami has released 5 albums, and her newest, My Reality, will be her 6th. She has changed record label from Sony Australia to ABC Music. That change has marked a major transition in more than just her professional life. It took bravery, determination, and faith to leave a major label, one that she'd been signed to as part of the prize in winning The X Factor. We have the album, My Reality, is multi-textured. It's adventurous pop. And as Dami explains, she recorded a lot of the vocals to great success at home due to pandemic restrictions. I highly recommend that you take a listen to her album and also that you seek out the Korean language versions that she's recorded of some of her songs. She's a brilliant musician and just a fantastic person. And I think our chat reflects very much that it was such an enjoyable and laid-back experience to interview Dami Im. It's a fantastic album. It's quite diverse in the sound. How are you feeling about it at this point?
I feel really really excited that it's finally about to come out, and I have said this before, but yeah, I feel like this is a dream album that I've always wanted to make since I was a teenager, so yeah, I'm really looking forward to having it out there.
And so, I mean, that's a long time, and you've released 5 previous albums. So, if this is the album you always wanted to make, what stopped you?
Well, I suppose there were a lot of things, but, you know, one of them was me being, I guess, I needed to understand how to achieve it. I feel like now I'm at a point where I do have the drive, the maturity, and the skills to be able to create what I actually hear in my head and what, like, trying to make the vision come to reality. Like, you can know what you want in your head, but executing it, I think, is a different question. And I think I struggled doing that because I just didn't know how to get there and work with the right people, collaborate, and, you know, and follow through with that vision to the end. And I feel like I'm finally reach that point where I have that confidence and the strength to do that.
See, that's interesting to me because one of my questions was around the fact that you've got a Bachelor of Music and a Master's in Vocals, and you were playing piano from the age of 5. I had assumed that that perhaps that technical language that you have and that deep understanding of music would have put you in a place where you could convey to other people what you wanted from your sound.
Yeah, I think there was a lot more to it than the musical skills. I think I had, you know, training in various kind of musical language, if you like, but trying to figure out, you know, because I got sort of thrown into the industry pretty quickly through The X Factor, and even though I had been making music all my life, and I had, you know, even made like a student's album before all that happened, and I was gigging and all that, it was different when I had to do it on a really big scale, and I had suddenly so much pressure, it wasn't just something I could do just for fun. All of a sudden I had to make something that would be played on radio, and what does that even mean, you know? And then I had all these people from a big label, and I didn't even know who was who and you know, like, I didn't know how that all worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then also then trying to figure out what I want to do. And I was also growing up personally. Like, everything was very confusing. And, you know, I did my absolute best in every situation, I think. But it was just really hard to, get to that point. And you know, like, I think I grew so much from all those years. But, now I feel like I've gotten to that point. But I'm sure I'll keep growing as well. So maybe next year I'll be like, nah, this is better. But I've got there.
So tell me about the people that you've worked with on this album and whether any of them came to you with ideas that were challenging, where you just went, oh, hold on, I don't know if I want to do that or if that's going to work.
I guess, yeah, that's the kind of joys and the challenges of working with other people. And, like, I don't usually or naturally love working in group settings. Even when, you know, ever since I was young, I liked doing things by myself, like a little bit of an introvert, and group tasks were always more tricky just because everybody has different opinions, and I also don't like to offend people and all those different things. But I guess I've learned to sort of be able to listen to other people's thoughts and opinions and also be able to stand up to my own at the same time and come to a decision that's, you know, beneficial for the project rather than just feeling like, oh, you know, it's either my, you know, my opinion wins or yours, or it doesn't. It's not really a competition. And the fact that I get the choice to, you know, ultimately, like, it's my album, so I get the choice whether the track ends up on it or not. So I can, you know, let people sort of have their input. If they want to say it should go this way, then, you know, I see what happens first before then I go, oh, it actually doesn't work for me, so I'm going to have to change it all.
So, but in terms of specifically, were there any points in this album where you listen back to it and you go, yeah, they had to talk me into that, but now I get it? Or where you listen to it and you go, yeah, when I told them they shouldn't do that and we didn't, that's what makes this work?
Let me think about that.
Okay.
Well, I think, okay, for example, I think that happens so many times. Like, every song, there's a bit of that in there, but specifically, I can think of, say, Scared to Talk to You, which is the second track on the album. Initially, I had the verse and pre-chorus and even a bit of a chorus written, and I took it to a session with, you know, Andrew and they, you know, initially they wanted to get rid of all the verses that I've written, and sort of like everything was changed at one point. But then,
is that Andy Mack that you're talking about?
No, this is Andrew Burford.
Okay.
And then eventually we're like, no, what Dami had at the start actually works and we really like it. So we kept the lyrics, like, there's really specific lines like, it's that song is about an old friend from childhood. You know, you grew up together, but then you're older and your relationship sort of changed and it's become a bit awkward. And there's this line where you go at the start, remember the time you know you were rebellious, they thought you were rebellious, but you were just sad and your parents had a divorce, and you know, and you were there when I had my when I fainted from my period pain. Like, it's very specific, and, you know, at first we were like, oh, it's not working, but then, you know, there were also like when my collaborators say, oh, it's not really working, then I go, okay, let's ditch it. I don't get precious. But then when they...
I mean, there's not a whole lot of pop songs about period pain. It's a new niche.
And I actually do me every month, and like I you know, the hormones and the cycle affects my life so much. So it's like, just get used to it. This is like what happens every single day. So yeah, I'm really glad we kept those lyrics.
So am I, and I look forward to a whole remix album in which we just talk about periods. But let me carry on. I would love that, and the costumes for the live performance will be something else. But let's move on. A lot of blood. It must be Halloween on the brain. With the title of the album, tell me about what reality means to you, and especially, I guess, when we're thinking about the fact that you have been the star of a number of reality television shows. I mean, is that reality? What is reality? Is there only one version?
Well, for me, when I came up with the title, my reality, I wanted it to mean like it is my reality, like the truth that is happening as it is. It's like factual, but also at the same time it's not factual, because what I consider to be my reality may be actually like different to how other people perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like it's factual and like a fantasy all at the same time.
Mm.
And that's what I wanted to mean. Like people, you know, because of, I guess, all the televisions and realities, TV shows or whatever, a lot of people assume they know me. They know me a certain way, but I don't think they know me all the way, you know, all the different ways. And I think this album is just that. Like some of it is like, oh yeah, that sounds like her, that's what we know her as, and you know her music for. But then other songs, they might be like, oh, that's not really Dami, but I'm telling you, like, it is me, you just don't know it, and or don't want to know about it. And that's something that's sort of played on my mind a lot over the last, you know, how many years that I've been, you know, more known to the public. It's like, oh, like whenever people say, oh, that's not really you, or that's so you, I'm just like, maybe it is me, or me, but it's like a portrayal or in your mind of how a person comes across to her. So,
and you know, I think that's an experience that's common to all people and all women. Obviously not the television and the extreme public exposure, but I think everyone has had a moment in their life, or many, where people they know and even people they don't know have said, oh, that's so you, or, you know, the outfit you're wearing is very you. And for a moment you go, wow, I thought I was doing something different, or, you know, I think that, or something in you, I don't know, when I say something in you, I know I've had it, and sometimes someone will go, oh, that's not really you, and man, I get furious, because it's that presumption that you know someone purely because you know something about them.
Yeah, and like the other example I can think of is, you know, I might say, oh, you know, I love these sunglasses, and I think they're really unique, and like none of my friends have sunglasses like that, or even like, oh, I'd love to have a poodle or something like that, and then someone would say, wow, that's so Asian.
Oh.
Feel like they're unique, but when somebody just lumps you into a group and just go, oh, you're just an Asian, like, it's just like, oh, you feel so angry.
I have to be fully honest. That is not an experience that I've had, and I can't even imagine. If I tried to put myself in your shoes, I would be furious, but I'd also, I think I'd be really hurt, honestly.
Yeah, I think it gets a bit, like, it's just annoying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when it happens frequently and you just go, oh, my gosh, it's just like, shut up.
Is that something that you've experienced?
You just feel it. I don't think it's like people can group you into anything. Like, that's what girls do, or you know, whatever stereotype they like to put on you, people will do it to you, and you just like, come on, I'm just one individual person.
I guess. That actually was my next question. So I'm glad that we got there. Because my next question was, the fact that Australia's closed its borders, and it feels like, even in the reporting of vaccination, et cetera, the way that they've sort of divided it up into states and then genders and then ethnicity, it feels like there's really a growing sense of division, at least that's the perception that I've had. And I'm wondering, has celebrity protected you at all from racism, or has it been something that is perhaps even more blown up being in the public eye?
Well, for me, I have to say, growing up, I was pretty lucky, or I was quite naive and oblivious. I didn't really feel like there was racism in you know, at least where I lived in Brisbane, or my school. We were pretty good and quite multicultural as well. But the older I get, and you know, becoming you know, more well known, I get to hear more stories from various different communities, and I think a lot of Australian population, like, they're very open-minded and, you know, really accepting of different cultures, and it's beautiful, but it's definitely not the case for everyone, and there are communities where that's still, I guess, they're still not used to having other cultures or people with other different backgrounds in their friendship group or in their community, so for them it's just... I guess, like, if you don't know a different culture or somebody from a different background, it's easy to be scared of it and just have this kind of, I don't know, contempt for something that you don't know, something that you fear.
And so I guess within the industry, though, so I'm thinking, within both music and TV, have there been times where people within the industry have wanted to play up cliches or stereotypes? Has that been something where you felt pressured to play along, or you've spoken up and it's cost you something?
No, I don't think I've experienced things like that. And, you know, I think media and everybody are a lot more aware and conscious of not, you know, at least on the outside, showing any kind of, you know, racism or any racist-like behaviour, anything like that. So I think it's good. There is a lot of progress.
I guess I'm thinking about the fact that my sister and I grew up watching Neighbours, and honestly, and it feels amazing in hindsight, but, you know, the fact that everyone was white on that show for, like, I don't know, 30 years, and then any Asian or black character would have to have a story, obviously, about being Asian or black. And then, you know, things like Heartbreak High, though, came in the 90s and that sort of normalised, I think, the actual Australia that people know, which is so diverse.
Yeah, I think definitely there are certain TV shows that I've experienced that were a lot more, like, just, yeah, explicitly one type of look and... You know, I don't know, it's just, I think there's, I still feel like there's so many people, I guess, in the industry who are oblivious to the diversity that exists outside those, you know, few people that they hang out with. So it's, you know, it is getting better, but it's still very underrepresented on certain media channels, and also the people that work there are just one look as well. And you just think, oh wow, like some TV sets I walk on and I go, oh, wow, I feel very different because I'm the only one that looks different to everybody else. They all have blonde hair and blue eyes, and you know, it's very, yeah, I think people don't mean to be you know, not inclusive, but it's just that's what people are comfortable with and think that's how it should be, because that's how it has been for so long. So it's hard for a lot of channels and groups to think outside that box and know other people exist.
I think the I think that old saying that you can't be what you can't see holds strong. And I think not only at the time is seeing you on the screen killing it, frankly, going to show women and girls that they could have a role in media, but I think long term it says to media companies that people want to see, they want to see their neighbourhood represented in their media. Anything else is frankly offensive.
Exactly. And, yeah, I remember in 2013 when I was on X Factor, so many of my friends who were, you know, who had various different cultural backgrounds, a lot of Asian friends, they all said to me, hey, I hope you go really well, but, you know, we don't think you as an Asian would win. Sorry.
Like,
that's what my friends and the community were saying, and they were wrong, luckily, and I ended up winning, and it was kind of, you know, everybody was so proud, not just the Asian community, but people of so many different backgrounds. They would come to me like, you know, this kind of, I think he was a Middle Eastern restaurant owner one day, like I was eating, and he came to me and be like, yeah, we're so proud of you as, you know, someone with a different background. Yeah, please do it for us. And it was really lovely. And I do remember something that I was really proud of was the year after me on X Factor, you on TV, you saw so many more Asian people on the screen, and I was just like, wow, this is, you know, now people believe that it's possible. And there's also probably the producers saw that you don't have to have 100% white people for a show to be successful.
And what I loved was, I mean, you just did such a diverse range of songs on that show. I mean, you crossed genres, you crossed nations. It was a very impressive outing.
Thank you.
Let's talk about songcraft. I'm wondering, it's interesting, I was interviewing another musician recently and they were saying that learning piano really gave them the grounding to understand music, period. Because, and that reminded me that I learned piano when I was young as well, and I had to learn the scales, the notes, the had to practice daily and sing, mm-hmm. And I took for granted that that's just what every kid does. But, I mean, there's a whole lot of people I know who look at a music scale and have zero idea what's going on there. I mean, did that set you up to understand music at a deeper level from a young age?
Definitely. We always had music around our house because my mum she was trained in opera and, you know, classical singing. Mm-hmm. So we always had lots of music in the house, lots of classical music, and, you know, we couldn't not play music, me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And my dad loved playing all the different instruments as well and singing. So, you know, and yeah, playing the piano, not only was that helpful for me musically, I think that's what made me have some kind of like identity and confidence when I first came to Australia, because I couldn't speak English very well, so I felt really dumb, like everybody else was better at me, obviously, at everything else because of that. But whenever it came to music, I could play piano, and I could see, you know, at that school I was, you know, it was a really tiny school, and everybody thought I was the best, and, you know, I felt really proud as a little kid. So yeah, music just gave me this other language that I could use instead of just the English language that I couldn't really use very well.
It's so interesting. On this album, and even with the singles that you released prior to this, you've written about loneliness and resilience, about mothers and daughters and faking happiness. And I'm wondering, are there any experiences that you haven't written about yet that perhaps feel too personal and that you haven't found the words for yet?
That's a really interesting question.
I like to hit people with big questions at right around lunchtime when they're going, I'd actually like to think about lunch, but here you are making me reflect on my whole life.
goodness, that's deep. I try and go to those uncomfortable problems and thoughts and experiences, because I think, like, when I go there, those dangerous places, that's where the best songs come and people are able to relate to it more. So, but what's something I haven't done? What haven't I done? Maybe there's, I mean, I think I felt so much frustration about, like, I get frustrated about so many things. Maybe it's just my personality, it's just grumpy, but it's just like, yeah, things I get really pissed off about, like, you know, just things on, I guess I've sort of written about it, like on social media, like what people say and like how people, you know, I've hated it every time I post a photo and it's from like a fashion shoot and they go, why aren't you smiling? Where's the smile? Why isn't And I actually did use that line, like, I want to stop smiling on my Instagram. but it's just like, I think I've never written something to really... actually, you know what? When we were talking about the lack of diversity on some of the TV shows, I did at one point, I did start a song sort of about that theme, and I never sort of finished it, or, you know, didn't really keep going with it, but it was about like wanting to be on the main stage, because I kept feeling like, I don't know, I couldn't pinpoint what it was, but I felt like I was being pushed to the side of the stage instead of the main stage, and I just felt, yeah, like, real frustrated about that. And so, yeah, maybe if I can find the right words to write a song like that, maybe that's something I could revisit.
And I'm wondering then, especially with the diverse sort of pop and hip-hop collaborators on this album, did that feel like you were supported? Did you feel like people had your back when you were working on this album?
Definitely, yeah. Everybody I worked with on this album, I worked with them because they were really, not only really good at what they do, but I actually liked working with them as mm-hmm. a person. I liked mm-hmm. them as people. Mm-hmm. And they were respectful and, you know, I could feel safe sort of sharing my ideas, and like if I said, like, shared an opinion, they wouldn't just ignore it, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not everybody is like that, and if I felt like, you know, silenced or frustrated in that process, then it's like I can't get the best results out of it. And mm-hmm. since now it's, you know, I have full control over my album, then I don't have to keep working with them or use the song that we did. So, mm-hmm. yeah, everything ended up because I really like them.
Mm-hmm. Are these people you'd worked with before at all? Who was new to you?
So, Prey, I wrote with Audius, and I actually met him for the first time in that studio mm-hmm. when we wrote the song. So, yeah, like, there are just some people that I just met, but, you know, immediately you feel really comfortable with and you can just talk about anything. Like, we chatted for, like, ages. Like, we didn't even do any work for hours because we were just talking about our lives. And
so then how did those collaborations come together? Whose suggestion, whose help was that?
So that's through my manager and through publishing companies, and yeah, we reach out and they mm-hmm. they suggest people, and yeah, we go from there.
Okay. I'm just asking because I genuinely don't know how that works. So
yeah, it's all like just connections, and you try different people and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like life. I'm gonna ask you a hard hitter, and this is where I go into an uncomfortable place, but I know that you're up for it. I know that that this is what you do. So did you watch the recent Four Corners investigation into Sony Australia, and did you recognise it as the place that you were signed up to for 7 years?
I did watch it, and yeah, mm-hmm. that's where I was.
mm-hmm. Were there times where you tried to say something and it failed to get listened to, or it failed to go anywhere?
Well, all I can say is, you know, when I was at Sony, I had some really great opportunities and really great experiences as well, performing at Eurovision, things like that, and being able to release my music and tour and all that. But, you know, on a creative level, as a singer-songwriter, I felt that I needed to have more creative control because, yeah, I felt, you know, it wasn't, I didn't have as much control over that as much as I would have liked to, mm-hmm. and I've learned that I like to be the boss when it comes to my songwriting, so mm-hmm. it was, you know, for me it was time to leave, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the attitude towards women in particular, were there occasions where you saw or felt that there was an attitude towards you that just made you uncomfortable?
I don't want to comment too much about that, but mm-hmm. You know, whatever yeah, whatever the staff experienced there, the artists also experienced. So mm-hmm. I can assure you that, yeah, it was the same for, yeah, the staff or the artists. So that's that.
Yeah, I hear you. And look, frankly, I have seen all the it actually really pissed me off yesterday. I am someone who gets very pissed off about things as well. So we should just hang out and get really pissed off together. But I know. Perhaps that'll be a late calling for me. But because I know quite a lot of managers and publicists who did leave Sony, and I'd never asked about it. I just assumed that it was an industry in which you do move around and that sort of thing. So it's only actually in the past couple of weeks where quite a number of women that I work with have said, oh my God, it's such a relief that this is coming out. That's why I left. And it just had not occurred to me to ask. But then on Twitter, which has to be the worst possible place to go if you're easily pissed off, a whole bunch of men, everyone's angry. A whole bunch of men from the media were saying, why aren't all the artists coming out and telling their stories? Why aren't they coming forward? And I got pissed off enough that I said, well, because they've still got careers, and because this is a competitive and it's a tough place to work at the best of times, a whole bunch of women coming out and complaining is putting their career on the line, and it is whatever people say. So it's all very well for, you know, a 20-year-old radio presenter to come out and go, come and tell your story right now. I want that on my show. And for a woman to say, actually, I'm traumatized still, and I don't really want to be grilled about this, like I am doing to you now.
Anybody should be shamed into mm-hmm. sharing their, you know, stories. What, you know, if it's something so personal and traumatic. But mm-hmm. yeah, like I said, I've never been. I don't think I've ever been, you know, like silent about it. Like I've always sort of said things about my experience, and I guess it, you know, people didn't really pay that much attention until now. All of a sudden, everyone mm-hmm. wants to, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's whatever the staff experience, as I said, the artists also experienced. Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt about that.
And so ABC, had you been in discussion with them for long? When did they enter the picture?
So I got signed with ABC last year, 2020. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when I first released my Paper Dragon with them, and yeah.
And that's been a very different experience there. I guess creatively, did you go in and know this time what you wanted from a deal? Because I imagine that when you first go into a record deal, I mean, if that's new to you, how do you know what to ask for?
I knew from other people their experiences with ABC, and my manager knew the people at ABC, the head of ABC, really well,
mm-hmm.
and knew that their culture was very, very respectful towards their artist, and they, you know, respect their artist's visions. And that, for me, having that, you know, creative control completely was my main concern.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I knew it was going to be a good experience in that way with what I was looking for, and it has been. They've been very, very supportive, and you know, Nat Waller, who's head of ABC, has been really, really nothing but supportive of my music and my vision. And yeah, I was able to explore all the different, you know, ideas and songs and photos and all the different things I wanted to do there. So it's been really a healthy explorative chapter for me so far.
I love that. It's so interesting. I actually did interview another musician earlier this morning who was talking about things being healthy. I think this is a COVID thing that people are reflecting on what matters in their life, and it's and health is really a priority for people going ahead. He was actually talking about in relation to relentless touring and how he was intending on. Well, not in Australia, but in the US, people are touring again, and he was saying, interestingly, that you know, he'd really had time and he'd never stopped before and thought about it, but in fact, he ended up in debt after touring, and it was relentless, and I sort of thought, was that something that you considered, whether your schedule was working for you?
I guess, you know, sometimes my schedule would get a bit too hectic, like more than I could handle. But then, no, I think, you know, in the past few years, it's been pretty good. I feel like I've gained a lot more control over my schedule, mm-hmm. and my life in general, mm-hmm. and I think it's just part of growing older as well. You just know like what you need and what you don't really need in your life, so you just cut down things you don't really want to do, and that doesn't actually help you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with you know, the COVID, it's like when I first got to come home and just spend months at home and not touring and traveling, I actually enjoyed it for the first few months, and then of course 2 months of that is also not healthy, because you can't really work and do your, you know, usual livelihood of mm-hmm. doing all the engagements and all that. But yeah, I guess for recording artists, like, it's for like myself, it's given me time to actually focus on my album and not just do it in my spare time between other gigs, but actually just really think about what matters to me and reflect that in the album, rather than just like putting it together with, like, you know, sometimes you just rush through things and have to release something, like you just put it out there. But yeah, like, I've had a lot of time to just sit on it and let it sort of develop.
So over what period did it take to make this album, and what was the recording process like? Did you go in over a couple of weeks every day, or how did it work?
Yeah, so the first single that came out of this album, like, it already started, like, it was my first release. It was my Crying on the Water. It was the first song I released independently, mm-hmm. and so that song is on the album. And that was a really different time, because we could travel, and I think I recorded that in Sydney maybe. But a lot of my other albums, it was funny because I ended up recording the vocals from my home, and mm-hmm. it wasn't because, like, I didn't do it as much previously because I just wasn't sure whether my home setup was good enough. Mm. But then when lockdown happened, there wasn't much of a choice, so I had to do it from home, and it turned out to be more than good enough. And, you know, it was the quality was up there. So I'm like, well, there you go. I don't need to actually travel to Sydney to be able to record something. And
so just do it at home. Just to clarify, Crying Underwater came out in 2019, is that correct? Uh-huh. And then, so I think you said that you recorded the other albums, the vocals from home, but I think you mean the other tracks?
Other tracks, yes, sorry.
Yeah, cool.
A lot of them, not all of them, but a good chunk of them I did from, like, Lonely Cactus, I also did from home in the thick of lockdown.
Wow, and that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people, even, like, you know, I think Billie Eilish made her whole album from her garage in her home studio with her brother. It's, you know, obviously she's fine with it. Yeah, everyone's fine with it. So it's also helped me to work with a lot of people over Zoom and people mm-hmm. that are, all over, based in like London and people based overseas or mm-hmm. different parts of Australia. Like we had the freedom to just work with whoever we liked.
And so with Andy Mack and One Above and Constantin Kersting, were you in the physical studio with any and all of them?
So with the tracks that I did with Andy, I did them in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which one did I do? Marching On I did in Sydney at a beautiful studio. And maybe, I think Kiss You Anyway, I might have done it in Sydney as well.
Mm-hmm.
Constantin, I actually did it in Brisbane at his studio, and it's only like 20 minutes from my house, which was a big coincidence, great coincidence. So I did it there, and which other track? There was one other track, with Garrett Alone. I did some of the vocals at his studio in Byron Bay and the rest of it from home.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm thinking from a Melbourne perspective, we're not allowed to go anywhere or do anything or take our masks off, frankly. So was this a period in which it was relatively easy to travel between Brisbane, Sydney and get around?
Yeah. Yeah, so we had these, like, you know, lucky window of time where we could travel, and we thought we were all going back to normal, so like, yay, let's go and record, and then we're back here again.
Can you tell me, and I'm going to let you go very soon, but what does your home studio look like? Where is it in your house, and what are you using?
My home studio is at the bottom of the house. It's like it's not a basement, but it's like semi-basement, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a sound interface, I've got a condenser microphone, a mixer, a keyboard, two really great sets of speakers, and a what's it called, iMac.
Mm-hmm. And so what software are you using to record things?
I record on Logic Pro.
Okay. That's my life goal, to master something, whether it's Logic Pro or Pro Tools or something. But even right now, I struggle with even getting Audacity to do what I want it to do. So. It's more for podcasts. I make weird music that only I listen to. it's not going to get me on Eurovision anytime soon, I guarantee you.
Oh, that's nice, though. You're able to do that.
Look, I think if you love music, at some point, whether you ever admit it or not, you try to do something. You try to make something and go, could I? Can I?
Yeah.
Final question. Are there any favourite tracks on this album? Ones where you just, you hear it and you go, yeah, wow, that's mine.
Yeah. That's like picking your favourite child, I guess.
I know.
But I have to say I do like this track called Memories.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it about us leaving our childhood home, and there's so many memories associated with the house, you know, mm-hmm. the Christmases that we've had, the first pet that's buried there,
mm-hmm.
you know, the trees that my dad planted, all those years of memories you sort of leave behind. And I saw that my dad got really emotional when we were leaving, and, you know, us kids were like, we're just moving to a better place, like nicer house and whatever. But then parents, for them, it's like, you know, a big end of a really big, important chapter for them.
Do you remember much about Seoul? I mean, because you were very young.
Yeah, no, this is in Brisbane, where we spent I was going to say childhood, but it was sort of like our teenage home. So we spent all the years through our, like, primary and high school, and, you know, X Factor and all of that, we all did it in that house, all the filming and everything. We had guests over and all those things. So it's quite emotional leaving that place especially for my parents. So I really thought about that and ended up writing a song, and I really like the fact that when I played it to actually my the guy who mastered it is Trent Dobson. He has a little son, and he said while he was mastering it made him cry because they just moved out of his, you know, the house that the little kid was born, you know, since the birth was grew up in, and they moved out, and you could relate to it. So I really like that.
I love that too. Are your parents still in Brisbane?
They're in Korea at the moment. So.
Oh wow. Yeah. When did they go back?
They were sort of going back and forth, spending a few months here, a few months over there, and then COVID. So I haven't seen my dad since 2019.
Is that tough?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I really miss them. Really miss them.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is rough. Are they intending on staying in Korea long term? Do you know?
I think they want to be here more. But you know, they don't want to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Dami, I'm going into ground that is not to do with your album, so thank you enormously for your generosity in being interviewed. It's a beautiful album. It's confessional, and it's beautiful. I did listen to the Korean version of Kiss You Anyway, which is gorgeous as well. My personal hope is that you record more albums in Korean. It's got a really beautiful sound to it. It works really well with Kiss You Anyway, with the musicality anyway. So hopefully that's something in future as well.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having a deep chat with me.
My pleasure. Keep me posted on that period album. I'll be the first to line up for the signed copy of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big advocate for periods and hormones.
That'll be my headline. Dami Im, advocate for periods. Honey, have a brilliant rest of your day. Good luck with all the promos and the TV and the everything that you're doing. I look forward to hearing everyone love your album.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been so wonderful.
Thanks, Dami. Hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Okay, take care.
Bye.